Hello, and welcome to Freudian Quips, a WPRK 91.5 FM radio show dedicated to promoting mental health awareness through the examination of popular culture and global current events. I'm your co-host, Dr. Samuel Sanabria.
Oh, and I'm your co-host, Dr. Derek Palladino.
The other co-host, yes.
That's right.
Spinderella cut it up one time.
What? Whoa, what is this?
I don't know, but you're dancing.
I am. I throw back to the 90s,
you're
man. This
kicking
is
it
awesome.
Right now.
You know, this song is really inspiring me right now.
Is it? Why?
Because it makes me want to talk about sex.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about spices.
Oh, like the condiments and spices, like salt and pepper?
Yeah.
No, we are going to talk about sex. Forget them, man. That's old news.
So again, I'm not prepared.
No, you're not prepared once again. Yes. Okay. So today we have a very interesting topic. We're going to talk about sex in particular, about sex education, because this weekend I had another sex talk with my daughter,
you
Lucia.
You did a
yes.
second one?
This
or
is,
a third
well,
one? Or
it's
a fourth
continuous one?
One
because she's very curious. She's interested. She's
is
six
she?
Years old. Yeah, she's 6 years old. Just, you know, in case our listeners don't know, I have a 6 year old daughter. And what I do is every night when we go to bed, I read her story, mm-hmm. which is great. This is my time with her that I absolutely cherish and adore. And after we read our books and our stories, we turn off the light and then I just lay there with her and we just talk. We just talk. We talk about the day, whatever. And I just sit there and I listen because I'm just curious to know what she's thinking and what
and how she's going to integrate the day.
Yeah, integrate the day. And, you know, so she'll reveal things and, you know, ask questions. But last night, or it was actually two nights ago, we're laying there and she starts to ask me questions about sex and in particular about pregnancy and having children because, you know, she is the product of a surrogacy process that we had because Andrew and I, again, for our listeners don't know, when we decided to have a child, we went through the surrogacy process. So we had two wonderful women who helped us. Mm-hmm. So we had an egg donor and then we had a surrogate who carried Lucia to term. And since the very beginning, we've shared with her exactly how she came to be in terms that she would understand. And one day she asked to see her birthing video because we were there.
Really?
Did I share this already?
No.
Yeah.
No,
so she,
I have no idea.
Yeah. This was, I think, a little over a year ago. So she was just turned five. And she's like, oh, I want to see the video. And I'm like, okay, are you sure? And she's like, yes. So I'm like, okay. So I played the video for her. And there was, of course, you know, our surrogate was in pain. There was a lot of people. There was
so
a lot of
she
chaos.
She saw everything.
No, because I was just letting it play, and I'm staring at her to see how, you know, just assessing her reaction and how she's processing all this information. And she had that frown, and she had that kind of like that shocked look. And right before she was going to be born, right before her head was coming out, she said, I don't want to see anymore. Stop the video. So I stopped the video. And since then, she's had a lot of questions about childbirth.
So did you pantomime the rest of it?
No, I didn't. No, I should have. I should have just gotten like a... No, that would be really ugly. I was going to say a couple of sheets and just pop my head out.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to teach.
But
about giving birth.
Yeah, because some people are just visual learners.
Well, it could either be, you know, from the vagina or C-section.
Yes, but this was this was natural childbirth. Actually, our surrogate didn't even get an epidermal or
anything. Do you know I saw the inside of my wife's stomach?
Oh, during the
C-section,
really?
Like the doctor said, look over the sheet because she had what do they call it? Half epidural, I guess.
Where they numb her lower half of her body. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I looked over and there was Miles. And I went back and I'm like, he's so gorgeous and beautiful, you know, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then I said, I'm going to look again. And I went to look and they had removed him to take him to his table or where they weigh him and all that. And there is her open I got the C-section everything.
You got to see the C-section.
Oh, my God, yes.
How was that for you?
It's imprinted in my brain.
Really?
Yes. But I walked and I got back over and I just said, I just saw your open stomach.
Oh, my God.
And it was crazy.
Oh man, I feel for you. That must have been really hard for you during the process. Yes, I mean,
well, actually,
did you get a lot of people trying to console you
process? Well, you do know the story that Miles was born 6 weeks early.
Yes, I do.
So
know
it was like
that,
an emergency C-section, but we'll talk about that in another episode in terms of, you know.
Yes. Okay.
You know, maybe a Labor Day episode, huh?
Oh, that would be like really interesting. Yeah, we got to make a note of that.
Okay. Yeah, not because of the word labor, just because I like 3-day weekends.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
So,
back
but
to you.
Anyways, so since watching the video, she's been asking a lot of questions about childbirth and how it happens, but for the purpose of her knowing how not to get pregnant, which I think is really interesting.
So. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Because she doesn't want to go through that process. She doesn't want to go through the pain.
So she remembers the pain and the agony on.
Well, not that she's personally
exactly.
Not that she personally experienced it. Exactly. It's been imprinted on her. It's not that she knows what it's like to give childbirth. She never wants to have that again. It's just that she saw somebody else have it and go through the pain.
And it looked horrible.
And it looked horrible. So, you know, the questions that she asks more of, how does one get pregnant? Do I need to have a baby? Do I have eggs in me or do I have a baby in me? And that was the question that she asked the night before is, do I have eggs inside of me? Huh. And so I was like, oh, there we go again with the...
It's on her mind. Yeah.
Yes. And so, I affirmed with her that it's a choice. Having a baby is a choice. She does not have to have a baby. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that there are ways that she can make sure that she does not have a baby. So then I went in to the discussion about more of the anatomy and the process of one, how one has a child. But anyways, I thought about this and thought, wow, this is really interesting because as a parent, I never thought that I would have this conversation with her so soon.
Yeah.
And not that, you know, 6 years old is too early because I had the sex talk way before.
Yeah.
You know, she turned 6 years old. So anyways, it was just a situation that I had that I became greatly aware, and I thought, well, this would be a great conversation to have.
Now, do you think that she, is it only the video that's created this line of questioning or other of her peers talking about it?
I don't know if her peers are talking about it. I know that her peers do ask her quite often how she came about, given that she has two fathers.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that she's able to articulate exactly how she came into this world. And she's very good at it. She says, well, I have two daddies and I have an egg donor, my biological mom, and then I have, who's the same person, and then I have a surrogate. And she just goes into detail about how she came to be because we've been sharing this with her since the very beginning.
Yeah.
So, I do like that. She does want to have a baby.
Okay. Just not now.
Not no, she would, no. She, and I need to clarify, she does want to have a baby.
Yeah.
Okay. She loves to play with her dolls and so forth. And she does play mom. It's not like she is avoiding it. She just doesn't want to get pregnant. She doesn't want to have a baby naturally. And she keeps talking about surrogacy herself or going through an adoption process to have a baby. Yeah. So anyway, so what about you? Because this made me think about having an episode on having the sex talk with children. And I know that you have.
I have a child.
You have a child.
I do.
Miles, he's younger than Lucia. I wonder, as a parent, have you thought about...
I've kind of started having it.
Really? With him?
Yeah, he was two in July.
Yeah.
And I'm not really having the sex talk, you know, but at his age and younger, boys get boners. And it could be sometimes painful for them. You know, they cry and squirm and...
You mean erections?
Erections, yes. That's more clinical term. Yes. But when I talk to him, he's two. I like to say the word boner.
Boners, okay.
I always think of that that character in Growing Pains, Boner. Is
oh, I
boner
know. Wasn't that? It was Boner. Mm-hmm. Terrible name.
Living above the garage.
Yes. Okay, go ahead. So anyways, he has erections.
He experiences erections, a.k.a. boners. And... I usually can see him in discomfort in the morning when I'm changing him, and then you can see it's a little erect. And I'll just, say, you know, oh, Miles, you know, you have an erection, and That's completely normal. And I know it hurts right now. It's a new pain. You haven't experienced this before. It's strange. So,
right.
I mean, I'll say it in like those types of ways just to let him know it's okay. And it's not something he should be scared of, because what we know about babies and sort of infants is they need to make sure the world is safe and trustworthy.
That's right.
So anything that enters into his worldview or realm, that's normal. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure I normalize it.
Yeah.
He may not be able to take it all in, but he will hear my voice and the tone of my voice and me reassuring him. And I think that does something.
Right. Oh, I think so. And if anything, it really helps you to be more comfortable talking about it, because you're practicing, you're starting now with having that conversation. And then when you actually get into a more deeper discussion,
yeah. mm-hmm.
where you have to be a little bit more detailed, you've already started the process for yourself.
That's right.
You know, to start talking about it. And I think that's fantastic. And I'm all for creating that safe world and that environment for your child, especially when it comes to sex. Because I know a lot of parents do feel very uncomfortable talking about it. So they either not talk about it, or they talk about it in a way that's shameful.
Yeah. That leads to guilt and
exactly.
shame over something that's natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did your parents give you a sex talk?
My parents did give me several sex talks, but it was, again, in the realm of guilt, bringing shame into mm-hmm. that practice, and in the sense of warning me against having sex, because this is prior to my coming out, which I came out to my parents when I was 12. So I had the sex talk with them at a very early age, especially from my father, who warned me that there are going to be girls out there who are going to try to trap me into marrying them.
Really?
Yes.
Because you had so much to offer.
And like, I have so much to offer, right? And so that to be very careful, and that not to have sex with them, or if I do, that I need to
What age was this?
Oh, this is before 12.
Oh.
This is before 12, yeah.
So they were going to trap you at 11?
Well, he's warning me, you know. First of all, just to let you know, both my parents are very traditional Latino mm-hmm. individuals, and this sense of being aware of your sexuality and being aware of your machismo and yeah. manlihood, that started at a very early age with my family. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this too. This is a very true story, and I share this in my sex class with my students. But when I was 10 years old, you know what my father, one of the gifts that my father gave me was a stack of Cherie magazines and Playboy magazines.
Oh, wow.
And he said to me that, as a 10-year-old, I am transitioning into a man, and this is what men look at and like. Okay,
I don't
and
know then he Cherie.
Cherie. it's
French.
It is French.
Is that the subtitle?
Uh-huh. It's muy French. Yeah. But no, it's like Playboy, but a little bit more
avant-garde. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit more advanced.
So I'm just picturing you. 11 years old in junior high,
oh, and they
high,
were
right?
dirty magazines, too. They weren't brand new spanking. They were, like, old magazines.
But, like, so you have these magazines, and then your dad is telling you, be mindful, because women are going to want to marry you to use you and take your riches. And mm-hmm. I'm picturing you as an 11-year-old boy going through junior high school, and some walking up and saying, that's a fine trapper keeper you got there.
Oh, yeah.
It's just keep telling it clean, me yeah. that you got something to offer, and, you know, keep the trapper keeper riches going.
Yeah, he told me, just tell him, keep on walking, keep on. There's nothing for you here. Yeah, this is my trapper keeper.
Wow. But,
no, I know. And what a mixed message that I received.
Oh, yeah.
So here he is saying, this is what men like, and this is what they look at, and, you know, so start that process. But then I get the messages to be careful of women because they can't be trusted. And that's all they want you for, is to trap uh-huh. you and by getting pregnant and forcing you to marry them. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my messages. Those were my messages.
Do you think that was a sign of the times and sign of the culture, your culture?
I think so. Absolutely. And, you know, and then just the level of discomfort that they had mm-hmm. as well. And these were very quick messages. It wasn't like, oh, let's sit down, let's relax, let's have this conversation. It was kind of very abrupt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you? Did you have the sex
talk?
Well,
I have. I'm half Puerto Rican, so my mom is Latina, and so there's that sort of conservative side there. Mm-hmm. But I really never had a talk. It was, you know, after a while, I realized that my friends were getting talks, and why wasn't I getting a talk? But then I was already at the age, and I can't remember how old I was. It had to be junior high, and I already knew about it. I didn't do anything, of course, but. I already knew about it and sort of what it was about. So I remember when I got older, probably eighth, ninth grade, I went up to my dad and I said, can we sit down and chat for a moment?
Oh, so you initiated the conversation.
In a way.
Interesting, yes.
But I initiated it because I was angry that he didn't initiate it with me. Mm-hmm. And I knew he was uncomfortable. So I wanted to make him feel uncomfortable. So it was kind of like the oppositional, defiant type of.
Yes. And
so I sat him down and I'm like.
Vintage Derek.
Yeah. Classic Palladino. But I sat him down and I said, I just don't understand this whole sex thing. And I just played very dumb and forced him to give it to me. And like halfway through, he's like, you already know this stuff. And I'm like, I do.
He was on to you. Yeah.
And then the only thing my mom has ever done, which it just feels childish, but she only would say to me, no hanky panky.
Oh,
right?
Yes, yeah.
It's like, that's not a sex talk. It's like, and it's like a term that no one uses. And I don't know how to define hanky panky.
Yeah.
But I think of the Benny Hill videos when I think of hanky panky.
How did you learn about sex? Because you said that by that time that you sat down with your father to make him uncomfortable, you already had this idea of sex, understanding.
I think from friends that have had sex. Mm-hmm. And of course, my first nudie magazine that I saw was not even a full magazine. It was a torn out page of like a Hustler or something like that, that we had in fifth grade. And someone gave it to me and we're just kind of walking around with it in the playground. And then I hid it underneath a goalpost. And so somehow... the teacher's aide or the recess person outside saw it.
Yes.
Do that. And my parents got called into the office
with
me, and the principal like showed it. And, so embarrassing.
Look at what your son is hiding.
And I'm going to keep this for evidence.
I wonder where that page is right now.
Who knows?
I wonder if it's in somebody else's other child's hands right now. Yeah. That's very interesting. So yeah, cause I remember learning about sex through my friends and my peers as well. Yeah. I also learned a lot about sex through my older cousins.
Oh, really?
Yes, because we had a huge family and I had lots of cousins and I remember growing up with them and so forth. And so we had those conversations, or I would be sitting in on a conversation that was going on. And that's how I picked up and learned about sex.
Yeah. And it's interesting, unless you have the direct experience, how you're learning is through friends and what they're saying, and who knows if they know what they're doing or if they're lying about their experiences.
Right.
And for me, it was also through a Snowy Television and Cinemax.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I remember one of my friends having that. We would just sit there and try to figure out what's going on, like, you know, in between.
I think
it's
the breast. Yeah. That's a foot.
There's some pumping going on. What do you think that is about?
Which really isn't the healthiest way to learn about sex.
No,
because
it's not. But it's cool, that
dramatic, right? It's either dramatic or it's sensationalism from your friends or lying from your friends.
To me, it wasn't dramatic. It was very sensationalized.
Yeah.
And it really skewed my understanding of what sex was really like, because when I had sex for the first time, it wasn't... I didn't hear music in the background,
nope.
And I didn't hear, there wasn't this automatic, experience of, groaning and moaning and being slammed up against the wall and what, it wasn't like, it was very awkward,
no
very
one delivered
messy.
A pizza.
No one delivered a pizza. Exactly. What was wrong with that? So I was highly disappointed, but so it did skew my understanding and view of what sex was like.
Now, we're talking about friends and like parents. Did you learn anything from school?
No. No, no, no. I take it back. Yes, we had the basic anatomy class of this is what boys have and this is what girls have. But the act of sex wasn't discussed. And like masturbation wasn't discussed, having intercourse, how to protect yourself, what are sexually transmitted diseases or infections. None of that was discussed. I don't remember. And I went to a private school. My high school was in a Catholic school. I remember that. So, no, we didn't have those discussions. What about you?
No, we had a health class that I remember watching, like, he would just show videos. We watched a lot of Degrassi Junior High.
Yes, if you remember I love that show. The original one.
Yeah, the original one.
Great.
So we learned through that, but he didn't really talk too much about anything related to sex that I could recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was more basic hygiene. Yeah. You know, how to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. Put deodorant on. You know? Yeah. So the question that I have for you, because I'm just curious, is as you learned about sex through your peers and through magazines and those static videos, what information did you get wrong?
Probably all of it.
Yeah. Did you get any messages like, oh, if you masturbate, you'll go blind?
No.
Okay.
I've never heard that.
But anything close to that vein?
No, no strong beliefs. I mean, my dad has, in terms of religion, my dad's agnostic, and my mom's very Catholic, but she never really preached those types of things to us. I guess one thing that I got wrong was that it happens all the time to everyone. So it should have happened. I was thinking, why hasn't it happened to me yet?
Sex.
Yeah.
So how did you get this message?
Well, because all my friends were having sex.
And by what age were you supposed to have sex?
I figured by my freshman year I should.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like freshman, sophomore, I should have done it because everyone is talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's on TV and all these people are having sex on TV and me. So
then what did you tell yourself when you weren't having it?
Oh, I was probably flawed in some way.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So that's interesting because I never got that message. The message that I remember hearing that was way off base was the too much masturbation would cause you to grow hair on your palm.
I did hear the blind thing.
I did not. I heard that much
but
later.
I think it was a joke when I heard it.
Well, when I heard about the hairy palms, it wasn't said in a manner of a joke. Yeah. Actually, it was my sister's boyfriend who told me this. I remember that.
I mean, but what a great way to scare a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because how embarrassing would it be for you to have Harry and Harry and the Henderson
hands. Everyone would know that you're masturbating, exactly.
Oh, genius.
Yes.
It
well,
is.
But you know, a lot of parents and people, older people, do that in a way to avoid having those discussions or, you know, to help their child not to get into a situation where they might get pregnant or just have sex. They do use that fear tactic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, all right. So let's talk about this article that came out in Time Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the most recent episode of Time Magazine.
Episode? So it was online?
No, issue.
You listen to the magazine?
Well, I think maybe there might be a podcast on that. But this is an article that came out in the November 2nd issue of Time Magazine where the study was conducted that shows how talking about sex to your teenager actually helps your teenager.
It does.
Make better choices.
Do they define at what age
mm-hmm.
a teenager, you should be talking to a teenager?
Well, I don't know. I have to look at this. I'm sure that it's between the ages of 15 and, no, I don't know. I have to look at the actual study.
Yeah, I would say 15 would be too late.
Yeah, I think so.
So let's assume tween age
is
probably appropriate given today's climate in terms of kids having sex.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, but anyways, I thought it was really interesting that here was a study that came out that showed that there are positive effects to talking about sex with your teenagers. And I know that there's a lot of fear amongst parents and adults. And the belief that if you do talk about sex with children, with young adolescents, that hormonally they can't control themselves and that you're just opening that door and allowing them to just run out free and have sex.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a gateway talk.
It's a gateway drug.
To them getting STIs and getting pregnant and having tons of babies, dropping out of high school, all the fears that parents have for their kids.
Well, this study that was conducted by who? was it? It's JAMA.
JAMA?
JAMA.
I want to say JAMA.
Pediatrics. Oh, it was published by JAMA Pediatrics. Mm-hmm. So they looked at how,
it was 30 years of scholarship.
30 years.
Right.
So it was a meta-analysis looking at 30 years of studies. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they found that kids who often hear about the S word, which is sex, from parents make safer sex choices.
Okay.
The study pulled information from 52 peer-reviewed articles and drew information from more than 25,000 adolescents. That's a big sample to show that having discussions with your children, it just is informative for them.
Yeah.
And it allows them, first it takes the power away from it, and it allows them to make informed decisions.
Okay. Why is this important? Why is it so important for us to have these conversations with young people?
Well, I would rather, speak for me.
Yes.
I would rather Miles go into an intimate or sexual experience knowing what knowing his responsibility in it, knowing what the other person's responsibility is in it, and knowing what all the potential outcomes are. So he can decide if he doesn't have a condom, say.
Right.
He knows what all the potential things can happen if he doesn't have a condom.
Absolutely.
Right. So okay. I think it allows them to have all of these kind of like choose your own adventure understanding of the experience. And it allows, it just makes them more autonomous and more, it treats them like adults.
Yeah.
It's an, I think having sex is an adult decision.
But
kids are having it, yeah.
Yes. It's an adult decision. So what do you mean by that? It's an adult decision. Are you saying that only adults should engage in sex?
It's a mature decision.
It's a mature.
I'll say that.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense because we know that children are having sex, young people, and it's as hard it is to hear it and understand that, you know, it is happening.
Is it scaring you?
Well, you know, it's funny because I often think about Lucia as a sexual being, you know, as she grows older. I mean, she is a sexual being in some form or fashion, even at the age of six. But as she grows older and starts to have interest in having sex, you know, I think about, well, how am I going to feel as a parent, you know? And, you know, as much as I'd like to think that I would be fine with it, I'd be great, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm such a hip and advanced parent, there's still a part of me that cringes just the thought of
that. Yeah, me too.
And I do want her to be well informed, and I do want her to be empowered as not only as a woman but as a person in her sex choices. Okay, I don't want her to be in a situation where she feels like she has to have sex.
I think it's a great way to put it, empowerment.
Yes. That's what I'd like for her. But let me share some statistics with you. This is a study that was conducted, or a report that came out from the Centers for Disease Control, found that half of high school children, almost half, 47% of young people, adolescents, have had sex by the time they've graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's a significant number, okay? Now, half of all infections that are sexually transmitted are acquired from people between the ages of 15 and 24. That's significant, okay? In 2013, 273,000 babies were born born to girls between the ages of 15 and 19. Amazing. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
15% of high school students who are having sex have had sex with more than four people.
Wow.
Okay. And 40% of adolescents who are having sex without condom use.
Okay? That's horrible to hear.
It is horrible to hear. So, you know, this is reality.
Mm-hmm.
This is reality, okay? Our young people, and we as a country, we as parents, we as adults, we need to be comfortable with that realization.
Right.
That young people are sexual beings. They're sexually curious, and they are engaging, for, you know, a large part.
So here's another scary piece
of that. Go ahead.
is there is a study done that students or children by age 15, the study shown that at least 25% of teens report never having heard anything about sex from their parents.
Mm-hmm.
But in that same study, the parents' proportion was higher in terms of them reporting they talked about sex to their kids.
Or so they think they did,
right?
They
so
did,
there's
yes.
miscommunication there,
mm-hmm.
or they're inviting that discussion in a wrong way, mm. not really talking about it, and not
creating an environment where the child is listening.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. that's very interesting because I can see parents say, "Oh, I have my talk already," and then they feel that's it; it's over and done with, mm-hmm. and it hasn't really happened.
And you don't check
processed.
In on it, right?
Exactly.
You have it; you're done. You feel like, "Phew, I'm done."
Exactly.
That's not how it works. I think these talks need to continue, like with you and Lucia, continue over their development.
Yes.
Because they're going to have different thoughts, different feelings as they mature psychologically and physically.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something about, because you brought up my talk with Lucia. I love the fact and I appreciate that she does feel comfortable mm-hmm. coming to me and asking these questions. And I'm hoping that in my responses and the way that I respond to her invites her to keep coming to me and having these conversations.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. In the state of Florida, we have seen a 23% increase in the rate of STIs.
Yeah.
Okay, since 1997, or actually it was a 23% increase between 1997 to 2006. I don't know what the percentage of increase, if there mm-hmm. has been one since from 2006 to 2009.
Now, is that for children or for the population?
Oh, it's for young people.
Oh,
yes,
young people.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Young people.
Because there also is an increase mm-hmm. in STIs in reported cases of syphilis and chlamydia. In older adults, 55 or older, and I don't know if you've heard the stories.
I have.
In the
absolutely.
Villages,
yeah, yes,
yeah. So that community is having a high rate, but they're not the highest. There's dramatic rises in other retirement communities in Arizona and other places
mm-hmm.
where we're
seeing this rate.
Yeah, so it's almost like we need to have the talk when they're young, but it might be generational.
It is.
Right?
I think so. I really think that for example, growing up in the 80s. I was made keenly aware because of the media of AIDS, mm-hmm. HIV.
Yeah.
And so I grew up, when I was developing myself sexually, grew up with these messages of sex is dangerous, sex is dangerous, sex. But not my parents. My parents never, I mean, their sense of danger was not getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Ours was not getting pregnant and not getting HIV.
Yeah. So now they're all in the villages, and I'm not going to speak for all of them, but they probably have that mindset that I'm too old to get anyone pregnant or I'm too old to have a child. I'm by myself. There's all these single people my age. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yeah. If they've lived this long, I'm with my peers and we've lived this long, mm-hmm. then we must be STI free.
Yeah, exactly. I can imagine them in their golf carts, like scooting over to each other's houses, and my wife,
you know, that's going to be you. One of these days you're going to have your golf cart.
Amanda's parents from Michigan, and they wanted to buy a place down here in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon my digression, but I just want to tell this quick story. And they looked in the villages because my father-in-law loves to golf, so he just mm-hmm. wants to be mm-hmm. in a housing community that he can golf every day. So they went to the villages. And Amanda said that her mom was watching all of these widowers like checking out her father.
Yeah.
And it just made her uncomfortable. And I was like, we're not going to live here.
It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, that's going to be us, Derek. I'm telling you right now. Okay.
Let's be roommates.
Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about Florida, because that, we talked about the rate of STI mm-hmm. of infections in Florida. And Florida is a state, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but as a parent, you should be, that Florida is one of those states that do not require sex education.
I was aware.
Yes. And if you do have sex education in the classroom, it must be on an abstinence-only way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And no sex before marriage.
No sex before, exactly. So here, let me just show you, because I pulled this up, and in the state of Florida, schools are not mandated to have sex education. They're not mandated to talk about HIV or any other STI information. If they do talk about it, it does not have to be medically accurate. Can you
believe that?
Can you believe?
What are they going to say? Why would you talk about something that's not accurate?
I don't know.
So they can make up things.
It does. When providing sex education, they have been exempted from providing medically accurate information. Okay, this is the state of Florida. Okay, now, if they do talk about sex, it's mandated that if schools talk about it, it's mandated that it needs to be age appropriate, which I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that it needs, they've also been excluded from providing culturally appropriate and unbiased education. So it can be absolutely biased, and which it is. Okay. And parents are allowed to opt out of any type of sex talk in schools. Okay.
Right.
That's one report. Here's another one. Okay. In the state of Florida, if they do talk about sex, it must be abstinence only sex.
Right.
And it must be in the context of sex in marriage. Okay. No talk about sexual orientation or premarital sex. There is, and if they talk about sex, it must be in the context of what the negative outcomes of teen sex is, okay? And they are not allowed to talk about healthy decision-making or how to avoid coercive sex, okay? And again, abstinence only is stress. This is in the state of Florida.
That's crazy.
Okay, so you take that and then realize the rate of STIs and the rate of children who are having sex without condoms.
Mm-hmm. And then babies having babies.
And babies having babies. And you see, I'm seeing a connection there.
Yeah. Yeah. And add in the fact that parents think that they're having conversations that are helpful with their children. Or they're not having them at all.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm all for having sex education in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not in favor of, and I feel very uncomfortable about this, but I understand, you know, parents are different and, you know, but I don't feel comfortable with the idea of parents opting out because I do not trust that parents are providing the most accurate information for their children. You know?
Yeah.
And I understand that you know, parents wanting to be in control of that, but I, you know, just don't feel confident.
Well, you know, when we had Miles, we would, Amanda would tell me that she would hear from her friends that, oh, you're so grateful to have a boy. You don't have to worry about him getting pregnant.
Ah, yeah.
But not talking about, okay, but if he gets someone pregnant, he still has to be responsible for his actions and everything. So there are, like, I think it's, there's some gender issues here that parents with boys may just not be having that talk as much in terms of be careful what the outcome is here.
Right.
Because they could just walk away.
Yeah. And that's just one area of concern regarding having unprotected sex.
Yep.
That, you know, boys are...
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be like boys. Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't mention anything about STIs.
It doesn't, no.
And protecting themselves physically. So anyways, we certainly have a lot of progress that needs to be made in this.
So should we talk about sort of how this improved? Like, connect mental health to it maybe?
Well, yeah, well, absolutely.
Okay.
So
I mean, that's kind of what we do here, right?
It is. I think so. I think so. So, you know, My thing is, like, why are they so concerned about talking about sex and trying to avoid that topic and giving misinformation? You know, because there's a part of it that's like, yeah, you do want to protect your child from getting pregnant or contracting an STI, but you're not really protecting them from that by when they do engage in having sex, by having that conversation.
I mean, you...
So then I'm sorry. And then I think, is it just sex? Is sex just a bad thing and a negative thing? You know?
For some people, right?
Absolutely.
And so if you want your child to not get in a car accident, you don't not teach him how to drive. Because when he gets in the car, he might get in a car accident because he doesn't know how to drive.
Yeah, so let's not teach him how to drive.
Teach them how to drive, and then you teach them responsibility around that.
Mm. So I think that we all need to feel more comfortable with the idea of sex and understand what are the benefits of sex. Mm-hmm. It's a biological and psychological need that we have, and there's a lot of benefits to having sex. So research shows that sex does improve our overall health.
Mm-hmm.
It makes us healthier. It improves our heart. It releases or reduces pain. If we're experiencing pains, it's really great for headaches.
Like
by the
minor
way.
Pain.
Yeah, minor pains. Yeah. You know, great. If you have a headache, you know how people say, not now I have a headache.
Yeah.
That's the time to have sex.
You not know, if so. You have a broken leg. That's not going to reduce the pain from a broken leg.
Exactly. But, you know, minor pains, absolutely.
It also reduces stress.
It does. It reduces stress. It helps with sleeping. It helps with your general mood. It helps with your overall physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
It helps with your skin.
Mm-hmm.
Provides healthier skin,
it's
healthier
a physical
hair.
Activity. So you're burning calories.
And you're burning calories. There is a definite benefit to having sex and understanding sex as a natural process of human development. Okay.
And I think one of the biggest parts of this is sex helps you develop your sexual intelligence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, talking about sex.
Talking about
it. And learning about it, right?
Talking about it, learning about it, and then having it responsibly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how can, or any tips that we have for parents or your older or adults who are in a position where they want to talk about sex with their child and, you know, how to go about doing that.
I would say don't freak out. Have thought about this before you need to give the talk, because you don't want to be shocked by your child and not be prepared to talk about it, because then you're going to be awkward.
Absolutely.
And your child's going to see that you're awkward and then feel like maybe sex is awkward. So you just want to, I would say, think about it sooner than later.
If you're awkward, your child's going to be awkward, and then they're not going to want to ask again.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So the very first time it's brought up, it's important that you can speak to it in a caring, compassionate way and with an intelligent way as well.
Right.
So stay away from euphemisms, you know, myths, stuff like that, and just talk about the cold, hard facts about what sex is and why people have it. What are the different outcomes of sex? What are the good things? What are the bad things that can happen?
So what I'm hearing is just be mentally and emotionally prepared for this.
Correct.
Okay. Another thing that a parent or an adult can do is to educate themselves, make sure that they have all the facts straight.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're having sex and you're an adult doesn't mean that you fully understand all the functioning behind having sex. So make sure that you do your own research and you have your solid understanding of sex, sexually transmitted infections and pregnancy and so forth, so that you can provide that.
I would also say avoid shaming within this conversation, shaming of sex or intimacy activities.
Right.
Sexual guilt or shame is when it's created in someone, they have feelings of responsibility and deep remorse associated with participating or even thinking about or having thoughts about sexual activity. So it could lead to children feeling and believing, actually, cold-heartedly believing that sex is immoral, it's sinful, or it's very unclean. So we don't want to put that in their minds because we know it isn't.
It's just an emotional baggage, because when they do get into a committed relationship, whether they choose to get married or not, then those messages and those feelings follow them into that relationship and then can have a negative effect on it.
That's right.
Absolutely. So I'm you know, no shaming, no guilting, empowering your child. Go into this with the understanding that this information is going to empower your child to make better choices for him or herself. So I think that's very important.
Anything else?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to think because this is such an important topic.
Yeah.
That, you know, I just want to make sure that people understand,
yeah,
that, you know, the how important this is.
Well, it's also
and not to shy away from
and
it.
And it's important to us. So, I mean, we're obviously on one side of this.
Right.
So there's other people who have very strong moral or religious convictions that would say we're absolutely wrong.
But, oh, I know that. I know that.
But I do want to say that we are talking from research. We're not, even though we personally feel like this is important, we're also speaking from the literature and saying these are some of the powerful benefits for talking to your children early on about healthy sex.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying, that this is the reality of life. Mm-hmm. Our young people are sexual beings and they are engaging in sex. This is just the reality and we have to come to terms with that. You know, what's really interesting is that sex education also includes abstinence education.
It does. Yeah.
It's part of the conversation.
Totally.
It's part, you know, so to see sex education as enforcing this idea of going out and having sex and condoning it is a fallacy because both sides are presented in sex education. And that's something that as a parent, you can provide for your child
as well. Abstinence is still the 100%, only thing that's 100% for no STIs or pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. But if they are going to have sex, then let them be prepared and be well informed consumers of sex, right?
That's right. That's right.
Good. Oh. Wait, this is different.
I don't hear the dogs.
I don't
is this
hear
supposed
the
to be
dogs.
A dog?
I thought it was supposed to be dogs. Is this the part where we talk about our doctor's notes segment?
I think it's supposed to be, but I don't know the song.
You don't know the song?
What is this?
This is, oh my gosh, the vinyls.
The
I touched
vinyls.
Myself.
Oh,
yes. It is the masturbation anthem song of the 90s, okay?
Oh, then our question must be about masturbation.
It is about masturbation. You read my mind.
I'm very good
okay,
at that.
You read my mind, absolutely. And by the way, as we talk about this, because this is from a listener who just happens to ask a sex related question, and this is perfect because it ties in with our topic today. But Derek, I do have to point out that I would like to see your hands on top of the table.
They're up. I've been working on this audio toggle switch for a while.
Okay, so make sure that that's the only thing that you're touching.
No, they're in the air.
Okay,
they're in the air.
Those buttons are the only things that you're allowed to touch.
I'm working the ones and twos over here.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
So, all right, so this is from a listener who we are going to call
Mr. Bation.
Yes. Okay, right. His name is Mr. Bation. And it's a very simple question. It's just straightforward. But how much is too much?
Too much what?
Masturbation.
Ah.
Absolutely. So he wants to know, how much is too much? And so let's talk about that because it's...
Well,
it's
with a name like Mr. Bation, I'm sure he's doing it quite a bit.
Well, you know, there are some guys who can do it quite a bit. I knew somebody who could masturbate and have an orgasm 7 times in one day. That was his record.
Who was it?
Somebody long, not me.
Give the name.
It was never me, but you know, somebody that I knew a very, very long time ago. But 7 times in one day, I can't even imagine
that's a lot.
What it's like.
That's
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So how much is too much? That's a really good question. It's interesting. I don't think that there is an answer to that. I don't think that there is such a thing as too much masturbation.
33 times a day.
Oh, that's the... No, what was that? What's the magic? 33?
33 times
the
a day.
Magic,
yeah, yeah.
That's the magic number. I say...
I just looked it up off the top of my head.
I say, hey, if you can have it 7... If you can do it 7 times a day where it doesn't have a negative side effect, for example, where you're rubbing yourself so raw that your penis is in pain...
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be male. It could be female, too. It could be your genitalia is in pain.
If your physical activity of masturbation
is
injuring your body and either, you know, rubbing skin off you know, you're cutting anything you could think of, if it's hurting you but you're continuing it.
Yes, then that's problematic.
That's problematic.
You should stop at that point for the physical.
Yeah, for psychologically, though... We know it's a healthy and normal thing to do, but my thoughts are if you seeking out a place and a time to masturbate is interfering with your social life, interfering with other functions, you're eating, you're sleeping, anything like that, and it's becoming sort of habitual, and almost addictive,
yes,
then that's when it becomes more harmful.
So you, are you saying that if you're missing out on work, you're calling in sick at work so you can stay home and masturbate those seven times? Then that's a problem right there. You know, another thing too, if it is also impacting your relationship. If it's gotten to the point where you can only experience an orgasm while masturbating and not during sexual intercourse with your partner, and if that is a problem in your relationship, then that's something to think about and reconsider.
And I think you need to talk to your partner about masturbation, because maybe they're doing it. Maybe you could do it together or something. The idea is that it's to not put it across that when I do this, it means that you're not good enough for me.
Right.
At all.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, but other than that, go at it.
Yeah.
Go, please.
It'll help you know yourself better. It's a natural aid to sleep. It's a natural aid for pain relief and for stress relief. So there's a lot of benefits.
There is. You know what's really interesting is that actual sexual intercourse, this is something, I don't know if you know, but actually provides more health benefits than masturbation.
It does.
Yeah. It's interesting. But masturbation does have health benefits as well. Okay. So go at it. All right. Now, we're at the end of our show.
We are. Yeah. I'm sad.
What's your takeaway for today?
Well, my takeaway, it's up to you, right? So, and we're talking about sex education.
Yes.
You're going to have to decide yourself based on your morals, your values, your religious connections and convictions and all that, whether or not it's the right thing for you to do. However, do your research. Please take our advice in terms of what the literature is saying regarding the benefits of talking to your children at an early age about what sex is. Try to put yourself aside and sort of think about how this might benefit them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mine is very similar. My takeaway is it's better to help your child make informed decisions, help your child to protect themselves, and you know, not to be afraid of having these conversations. It's better to have a informed, armed child than a ignorant child who's going to go out there and have sexual intercourse and may feel coerced to do so, or just not know the functions and the impact, the negative impacts that might happen. Mm-hmm. So have that conversation.
Yeah.
Talk about it. Cool.
Great.
All right.
So we're at the end.
We're at the end of our show,
that
Derek.
Was number 12. We this hit
is,
a dozen.
I know. This is, right.
It's exciting.
I'm really happy. Yes.
Well, thank you all for being a part of Freudian Quips for 12 episodes. And when we hit a baker's dozen, I think we'll eat a baker's dozen.
That sounds good.
It doesn't have to be donuts, though. It could be anything, really.
Right.
Sounds great. And, of course, that's the end of our show. Freudian Quips, WPRK 95.1, the best in basement radio.
It's actually 91.5.
I do that all the time. 91.5.
Yes.
I wrote it down wrong. But check us out on Facebook and Twitter, and also our doctor's notes section, like masturbation. You can write us in about anything, and we're happy to be here with you.
No shame, no guilt.
That's right. We will not shame or guilt you. Until next time, I'm Dr. Palladino.
And I'm Dr. Sanabria.
We love you.
Yes,
be
we
mentally
do.
Healthy. And we're at your edible complex.
You are listening to
WPRK
91.5 FM.
The best.
The best.
The best in basement radio.
WPRK.
WPRK.
Yes, it's recording. Okay.